Hello and welcome to the InsurTech Australia podcast. My name is Vanessa Dobson. I'm one of several co-founders who established InsurTech Australia a few years back. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Mark Cohen. Mark is the divisional CEO of Wilbur, and Wilbur happens to be a fresh name for a fresh approach for this technology business. Come listen in. So, hey, Mark, it is great to have you join us here today. Thank you for coming along.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, there's a lot of news to cover, I think, from your perspective. About 10 days ago, there were a number of press releases and excitement over the launch of Wilbur. And so before we get into what the Wilbur ecosystem offers, perhaps you could give us a brief overview of your strategic journey over this past year.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting year. I joined Camp Central about a year and a half ago, and we picked up a whole bunch of internal products. So we had a tech arm that was primarily serving the business itself and also targeting customers, but the bulk of our work was driven by internal customers or customers who are part of the group. What we've done is we have effectively consolidated the tech arm into a standalone business. And then within the brands that we had there was a little bit confusing to the external market to understand exactly what was going on. So we went on a bit of a brand journey that we worked with an external party. It took a while to really clarify the brand strategy. And what it boils down to is the business itself was started by Brian Simpson and the guys who worked in property assess and repair. So there's a nice story because they built a tech business because they found a gap in the market. And so they went after it. And if you think of the Wright brothers, they were bicycle mechanics. And so we took a little bit of inspiration from the Wright brothers, where if you see a model of their plane that they flew at Kitty Hawk, the engine was an aluminium block engine and the drive chain was actually a bicycle chain with bicycle cogs to drive the propellers. Mm. And that's because they were bike mechanics. And so there's a beautiful parallel between the bike mechanics inventing something new in a new industry that really changed the world and the history that we have, where we were born out of property building and they used the tools they had at hand to create something new. And it was achieved through iteration and just relentless innovation. The idea that innovation never rests is what we try to embody within the brand. And that's how we landed on Wilbur. Now within there, he said, we're going after three verticals. We have historically always been a claims oriented business. And so we continue with the idea of Wilbur Claims Manager, which is our flagship product. We do the managed repair services, which you would know if you've ever come across Claim Central before. It's a core part of our business. And then we're focusing on remote assessment tools as well, which is a product that we called LiveGenic, but it's now Wilbur Live. And those are the three pillars of the business now. So very easy, very simple story to tell. And we took away all the confusion.
That is a super interesting story about the parallels between what the Wright brothers are doing and, as you mentioned, spotting a gap in the market and bringing something new to an industry using this, I guess, the skills and the capabilities that you have to hand. So that's fantastic. Okay, and so you've explained a little bit there about the Wilbur ecosystem and those, the suite of products, just very briefly. So could you talk to us more about the problems that Wilbur actually solves and who Wilbur's customers are?
Okay. So the customers are usually insurers, life adjusters, TPAs. The reason that assessors would use our tools is, in fact, in COVID, we had a lot of success with Wilbur Live or LiveGenic because it allows the insurer to send an SMS link to a homeowner to do a remote inspection, a remote assessment. Could be a pre-risk or it could be in the event of a claim. And so that ability to not have contact, we solve for that. The actual reason the product was built was it allows for scale because effectively you remove the white space in a loss adjuster or an assessor's schedule. They're not commuting from job to job if they can send an SMS link and allows a shift to at least for some jobs, to go more desk-based. So it's kind of a theme there that we focus on solving for automation and for speeding things up, really. In the claim space, if you think of insurance, it's basically the two control systems. You've got policy and you've got claims. And we focus just on claims because of the history of our business. But we have a very good understanding of the claim lifecycle. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that we can connect everyone involved in a claim. And that is part of the secret sauce. So we'll connect the insured party. We'll connect a broker if it's a broker environment. We'll connect the insurance company. We'll connect the assessors, the trade. And everyone has a mechanism to sign in and actually participate in the one ecosystem. So that's a little bit different because there's this real heavy focus on, if it's a property or an automotive claim, on the assess and repair component. And so it's all about capturing as much data as you can and using that to keep things moving. It helps us with compliance, with all the new requirements we're seeing in Australia now with GICOP. We've got all the data to actually drive that in the system.
Mm.
And so we see that kind of connectivity as part of the secret sauce. And then a little bit less unique in the InsurTech Australia landscape, at least, but it's still relatively unique in the ecosystem, in the broader insurance ecosystem. Everything we build is cloud-based.
Mm-hmm.
So we host in the cloud, we'll deploy into geographies so that we can be compliant with GDPR for Europe or PAPIA for South Africa. So whatever the domain is, the geographic domain, we can deploy within the cloud to those regions. But then beyond that, we're pushing as hard as we can to use APIs everywhere. So everything we're doing is open and integratable, and we don't hold our customers' data hostage. The first thing we talk about in the discovery workshops is, where do you want your data delivered? So that kind of open connectivity is, at least in my head, is what's going to make a difference. We're not trying to sell every customer we talk to a suite. We're not trying to commandeer their entire enterprise software budget.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to solve their claims problem with all the expertise that we can muster.
Great. And that's a really important point that you mentioned earlier, in my view, about a true ecosystem approach. You know, you're connecting all of the players in that life cycle. And I particularly like that you use the phrase discovery workshops. It sounds like, you know, your customers are at the center of what you're designing here. Would that be a fair?
Absolutely. We're a customer-led organization. Everything we do is, not everything. We maintain roadmap where we actually want to do product innovation.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the work that we do is driven by customer requests or customer insights that we gain from those workshops. A lot of the work we do is actually driven by existing customers who find, as their businesses are evolving, it's quite expensive to solve a problem in a particular way. But if they can use APIs and bring in a third party, or if we can contribute data to a new initiative where they're trying to get better data, those insights we can actually incorporate back into our product and then take to our other customers. So it's kind of like the ideas that we're trying to bring in have got street cred. They've already got someone who wants them.
Yeah, and especially for insurtechs globally, that street cred is hard to build up initially, right? For many, they may have a great idea and even a great delivery mechanism, but you need some partners to work with, and you guys have established those relationships already. So on to that then, I think many of the listeners understand that partnering is so important, and in order to deliver value, it's essential, really. But for Wilbur, what has relationship building looked like? And of the partners you most enjoy working with, what qualities do they share?
This open approach is something that makes it really easy to work with people. When we go and work with a partner and they're happy to work with other companies, they're not trying to own the customer entirely, that psychology filters through to the working relationship day to day. We've done several policy systems and policy integrations. Obviously, we would, because we have to validate claims against policies. And the people who are the easiest to work with are the ones who've got an existing API. And that means that they've already embraced the thinking of an open standard. So they're already working in the modern connected software world. That always makes life a lot easier. Then we've also got go-to-market partnerships. We recently announced something with Base in particular. The Base have built out, they've been in the business for a long time. They have a very mature product. They focus on the finance side and on the policy admin side. And we have gone into customers together where they are running policy, we are running claims, and that relationship with that particular customer actually led us to a formal partnership because we both recognize that each other holds expertise that is relatively unique in the relationship. Mm-hmm. So that kind of relationship is always going to work a lot better because we go into a customer who wants to, you know, solve a broader problem than just claims. We've got these partners that we can bring in with us.
Yeah, and that's great news in terms of those kind of partnerships, that acknowledgement of the expertise that different partners bring.
Yeah.
And working together on that.
Yeah, we're in an ecosystem where we did a bit of a magic quadrant type map when we were working on our strategy over the last, this is probably, it would be between 6 and 12 months ago. And when you plot out the players who are in the insurance software space, as you come across them and spend a bit of time plotting it out, you end up with a very crowded landscape. There's so many people competing in the space.
Mm.
And so if you can talk to customers and approach them with in a collaborative way, you stand a better chance of winning when you're going up against the big guys because you're bringing them a solution that is actually viable and competitive.
Yes. Yeah, actually, in a webinar, an InsurTech Australia webinar recently, one of the guest speakers made a comment around particularly the larger technology players in Australia almost having a monopoly here. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, that you're willing to share,
Yeah, without a doubt, there's a quite a concentration of customers into relatively few providers at the top end of the ecosystem. The real strength of our product is in the assess and repair function, or in the, I mean, we have a highly configurable claims process, but our existing market footprint is very heavily dominated by property and automotive. The fact that we've got the strength in that particular module means that we find ourselves in scenarios where we're actually, we have a competitive offering to go to customers who are using the competitive claim system and integrate with us to hand over for assess and repair. So there are scenarios where it does make sense. And when you look at the spend on the tier ones in terms of what the software operating costs are compared to our cloud offering, it's not that much of a barrier to entry for them to work with us as well. In the scheme of things, in the scale of what these IT budgets look like, we're not that expensive. So we do see opportunities to partner with competitors in a sense as well.
Yes. And I guess as you mentioned earlier, that crowded landscape lends itself to hopefully partnering with competitors in a collaborative and positive way. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, and again, it's an acknowledgement of the expertise that you and your team bring to certain problems that the customers are trying to solve.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I imagine over the years, and certainly since your involvement with the broader team, there have undoubtedly been some key lessons learned. Are you able to tell us something about those and perhaps some advice you ignored?
Some advice I ignored. Before I joined, I was talking to a gent that I know who's an investor in tech startups. And he said to me that selling enterprise SaaS is harder than you think it is. And I think he was right. The sales cycle is you know, the people signing contracts on legacy claim systems in particular would often sign a 5-year contract. It's not unheard of. And in fact, it's, I think, still relatively common. So to have a conversation with the right person in the landscape at the right time, you have to be talking to people all the time.
Yes.
And maintaining those conversations is quite a sizable chunk of work. So I think I, at least coming into this role, I might have underestimated the complexity of managing the relationships and the sales cycle. That's definitely a lesson I should have listened a little bit harder to in the beginning. But yeah, that's been an interesting element of it. Also, there's a lot more risk aversion in the space than what I was expecting.
Mm.
So changing systems is quite a scary thing for a CIO. Often, especially if you've got a CIO who's been in the role for 5 years or 10 years, and he doesn't want to shake things too much. He doesn't want to shake rock the boats too much.
Mm.
And so it's a lot easier to just renew with an existing provider than to embrace a new platform or a new technology and wear the risk of a transition. So the workaround for that for us has always been, give us one line of work. If it's in the repair space, you know, we'd love to go after water mitigation, because it's the easiest place for us to show a material benefit. If it's in the claim space, we go after a small line and say, you know, let's just do a small trial on one part of the business as opposed to a very high risk all-in kind of investment. So that approach to, again, I guess you call it iterative selling. So close a small deal and then grow from there.
Yes. And that's really insightful. Yes, find a smaller problem and solve for that.
Yep.
And certainly I know many who will be listening will understand the challenge that you described there about the perhaps the incumbent CIOs, et cetera, especially if they have invested in the past in other systems and now they see something better and they have to go through that discussion, right?
Yep.
Say, well, we chose that one, yes, but now things have moved and we need to progress. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, in the old days you would invest in software and it was perfectly normal to expect to get like a 10, 15 year return on investment for a technology stack. But the pace of change and evolution in our industry is way beyond that now. The other thing, which is an interesting one, is when you're dealing with a CISO who is a chief information security officer who is risk averse, they're trying to deal with the requirements of GICOP or the requirements of the CPS, various CPS standards that we've got to meet, or ISO 27001, or SOC 2, or whichever other standards they are, you find that they want to offload risk as much as possible onto the provider.
Mm.
So we have spent a lot of time investing in that space to be able to wear it and to be able to show that we've got all the processes and procedures in place. And that's it shouldn't be underestimated. There's a huge requirement, a huge effort that's required to tick all the boxes in that compliance space.
Yeah, and that's another really important point, perhaps overlooked by some, although I think many of the insurtechs are kind of onto this now. It might be the painful end of the business to focus on, but so important. And yeah, yep. My dealings with CISOs is, their expectations are high, and we all know that the regulatory requirements are stringent. So we can see those agreements getting bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of number of words in order to cover off those really important pieces of legislation and privacy and et cetera. Yeah.
And that work is, as much as it's a relatively undesirable piece of the work that we want to do, we all just want to build cool products and take them to market.
Mm.
That compliance work is a lot easier to address up front than to retrofit into your business.
Yes. Yeah. And that's great advice for everyone who's listening. So thank you.
Don't put it off.
Yeah, yeah. Good lessons. I was interested too about what you said about having to, you know, you have to be talking to the people all of the time, essentially.
Yeah.
Certainly seems to be the rhythm of things in our industry. Now, when it comes to the Wilbur team and building that team and bringing in new team members, etc., what are the top two qualities you and your leadership team would be looking for?
An old friend of mine once always used to say, it's attitude, not aptitude, that determines altitude. And I love that quote. We were having a conversation about this recently. We obviously hire a fair number of tech people.
Mm.
We look for one of two things in the people we bring in. It would either be deep industry experience, and we have very deep experience in claims. We've got global experience. a person doesn't have the claims experience and they're always more hands-on, we'd look for the deep technology experience. So I would say to the two things, it's A or B on those. And the second one that we really push on is a culture fit. Culture fit sounds a bit fuzzy. It's not just, you know, did you have a conversation with a person and you got on well? Do they understand what it's like to work in a startup, and do they understand what it's like to work in a business that is, you've got quite a high concentration of, you have relatively few customers, so your effort per customer is quite concentrated. Mm. If you go into a project with a particular rollout with one customer, you can end up working with the same customer for many months, as opposed to in, say, mass media, where your customers are many and the effort per customer is very distributed. So the dynamic of the relationships changes a lot. Like, everyone in our business talks to customers. If it's, we've got delivery management, we've got BAs, we've got product managers. Nobody gets to offload having an interaction with a customer. So we look for that kind of a culture, people who are, they're in the business of technology, not the technology of business.
Great point. Yeah, and everyone speaking to the customer. Sometimes I wonder if that's a bit of a challenge for some technologists who perhaps...
Definitely.
Yeah. They've been deep inside, you know, larger tech teams within a larger organization. And so they don't have to have that interaction directly with the customer. But that, yeah, as you pointed out, that's completely different in insurtech and startup worlds.
Definitely. We don't have the luxury of saying, you know, you get to hide away in the organization and just, you know, pick tasks off the list and do them.
Yes.
It's a lot more fluid and a lot. We need those T-shaped people, as I said. Definitely. We've got that kind of a team culture.
Great. And that must take pressure off. Well, you may not necessarily have dedicated account managers, but often, you know, in a larger organization, the account manager then has to relay news back and forth or try to decipher what the technologists need or want.
Yeah, we have a bit of both, but we have a change manager and we have a delivery manager who work side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have BAs who will do the detailed capture. So when a need arises, they'll connect with the BAs and the product managers who will then work with the technology team. So we have, in a sense, that account manager function, but yeah, embedded in the team.
Mm, okay. Sounds like a good, hybrid or fluidity of roles.
Yeah. Personal. We keep it personal.
Great. And then with regards to, obviously, there's been the consolidation, if you like, of the product suite that falls under the Wilbur ecosystem. But in terms of where you imagined Wilbur could be, you and your team, is it there yet?
I'm going to quote someone else, but Jeff Bezos used to say it's always day one. You know, it's still day one at Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to steal that thinking a little bit to answer your question. We are definitely not done with day one. We're still reinventing ourselves. We probably always will be. Are we where we want to be? We've got a lot of space in front of us that we still want to close. So we have a lot of work to do. We're still really early days in the US. We're still really early days in South Africa. New Zealand is more of a services than a technology business, but we've got opportunity to grow there. So in terms of growth, still a lot of space to go. We're nowhere near mature or near done yet. And in terms of product, we have product in market, but we still see opportunity to keep building out. So it's not like we're taking off it off the pedal, not for a long time.
That's great to hear and sounds like fantastic ambition on behalf of you and the team. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
I love the global ambition that seems to flow through the InsurTech Australia ecosystem more broadly, both Australia and New Zealand. I think they're always looking outwards, and I think it's the same in South Africa as well.
Definitely,
yeah.
We get people approaching us who have complementary products or trying to figure out how to plug in. So it's as much us approaching other people. And we got a call recently with a small startup that's doing it's kind of an assessing function for validating claims against policies, but using machine learning to analyze text as opposed to highly structured data. And when we had the call with these guys, they're running a small startup out of, I don't think they have an office, and they're in South Africa. And they're scouring the globe to try and find who to partner with. And it's definitely that. It's how do we make 1 and 1 equal 3? How do we all work together and get a better outcome?
Yes.
Or a bigger outcome as well. Yeah, it is very much a, if you try and be insular and compete with everyone, there's way too many people out there.
Yeah.
You've got to be part of the community.
Cool. I like that. And then, so during the evolution of Wilbur, and I know there have been a few iterations leading into this point, but what have you been most grateful for?
Sure. I think my team. The team, when I joined the organization, there were people in the team who had been incredibly tenacious to keep things going and to run the business to get it to the point where it was. We really do have tenacious folk in the business. We have people with a good sense of humor. And, you know, that's really important in tough times as well. So when we've been going through turnarounds or rebuilds or more challenging times we've had since I joined, it's always been done with a smile, which is, it's incredibly important.
Mm.
Keep things personal, keep people friendly the whole way through whatever we're doing. And the team are really, really committed. You know, when we've had work that we need to do that goes out of hours because of the geographic footprint, I haven't had anyone complaining about it. And we try and manage that expectation, but at the same time, it happens a lot. And they really stick together. You can trust the team because they've got each other's back. So things just happen. You know, you talk to people, say we need to do something, and then it gets done. So definitely the team.
Yeah. And that's super encouraging to hear about that team sticking together, as you say, when things are tough or expectations have moved.
Yeah.
That's super encouraging to hear.
Yeah. When, you know, we've been in the middle of a huge go live and people are swamped with data migration or whatever it happens to be. And then you see other people in the team dropping by and saying, is anything I can help with, without having to be asked to drop in and say, can I help? Like, you can't buy that kind of I've got your back attitude.
No. Yeah. That's impressive. Yeah, and how many people in the team now?
We have 28 in Australia. We've got, I think the US team is about 16 now, and we've got the Ukraine is a large genetic, and we've got a custom solutions business where we do custom work for customers or for people in the space.
Mm.
So when you add all of that up, there's about 60 people in the Ukraine as well. So it's a decent footprint.
Wow. Okay. That's a massive team. And how do you find the dynamic in terms of keeping that connectivity across those different geographies?
We have to talk a lot. There's a lot of early mornings, late night meetings. More so, I think it depends on your role. So it doesn't really mean that to everyone, but there is definitely a lot of, you have to find the right time to actually be face to face. One of the things that we're always working on and trying to get better at, and COVID in a sense actually drove that more so into the business, but the ability to work asynchronously.
Mm.
So we've historically had, when work needs to be done, it's easier to do it if you can have everyone who needs to work together in the same time zone. But because we haven't been at that kind of scale where you can, you know, create a new project team and commit them to something, we very, very often end up with people in the US and Australia working together, or the US and South Africa working together. So not US, Australia and South Africa. So the time zone thing is something that we've gotten a lot better at, but it's just the nature of what we do that the demand will be there.
So, yeah, a bit of coordination there. I'm sure you'll have some great advice going forward on how to do that well across a global organization. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to talk to people all the time.
Yes. Well, Mark, look, this has been really insightful, and I've enjoyed learning more about the evolution of Wilbur and the focus that you and your team have had in that claims arena in particular. Great advice about the, you know, partnering and team building, etc. I know that people are going to enjoy listening to this, so I appreciate your time and wish you all the very best with the next great ambition for Wilbur and the team.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was great to chat.
Appreciate it. From all the team at InsurTech Australia, thank you for joining our conversation today. We have yet another interesting guest sharing with us next month. Catch you then.